Welcome to the FT Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 6th of December, and I'm recording at 9:43 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Well, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term audio for the various asset classes, but first I just want to say that I know it's been a very stressful week on this site, not least for subscribers, but not least regarding the audio, I should say. But if you've dared to have a look or dare to have a look over the weekend or next week, you'll notice that a lot of the dysfunctional problems have been resolved with all the frantic efforts. And we're really very hopeful that by the end of next week that the library will be almost respectable. It's certainly not going to be the finished product in terms of what we're looking for. And we've also removed some irritating things from the subscribers area of the general website, I'm glad to say. So again, thanks for all your thoughts on this, your suggestions, your patience, which is greatly appreciated and also inspirational. Now, what's going on here in terms of these global markets? Well, first, just a quick summary here of what's happened this week in the markets. And we saw initially, and actually it started last Friday, so we had on Wall Street, for instance, we had five consecutive days to the downside. No dynamics, and that's very important, but just that retreat from an overbought condition. And today we had upward dynamics because the Dow up 1.25%, 1.12%. I beg your pardon, 1.25%, 1.12% for the S&P, a little less for the NASDAQ at 0.73% to the upside. But it looks steadier on the charts, and it's wiped out the last 3 days' declines. So again, the consistency is still there. The bulls are still in charge. And there, we don't have to look too far for a very, very good reason. The quantitative easing continues, and that's the biggest driver of all for this stock market. Now, the news item which helped equities here today was the employment figures, which were healthier. And that's good news for the U.S. economy. It hasn't had much to speak of in terms of good news on the employment figures, although I'll be interested to see what the more extended assessment of the figures actually is. In other words, is it mostly due to short-term hirings for the Christmas period, or is it something more significant than that? Well, we'll find out eventually. But what it does mean, if it's more than just some Christmas hiring, that it would bring the tapering of quantitative easing a little bit closer, but we would have to have access to Fed meetings to know exactly what they're saying on this. But still, this is not over. This move to the upside for Wall Street. But Wall Street's been doing most of the running, as you know, and a lot of the other markets have been relatively soft, and not least the previously leading ASEAN indices, which peaked back in May for the most part. Now, of the three markets that I like the most among equities for the long term. And first, though, I'm just going to mention something else here. I think one of my big long-term forecasts is that I think we're going to see clear evidence of a secular bull market before the end of this decade. Now, In other words, what would be clear evidence be? Well, we'd be well above the previous highs, the 2000 and 2008 highs, and the highs which on Wall Street are slightly above those levels that we're seeing here right now. And we would be back to what would be a more normal type period of global GDP growth. But over the next few years, I think we're quite likely to see a fairly choppy period here overall. And I think there's some good reasons for that. One is that the increase in valuations, which I've mentioned almost daily, not least on Wall Street, but for a number of markets generally. And the other would be the uncertainty and volatility caused by the tapering. Now, a lot of people say tapering won't mean anything because it'll only be taking place because the U.S. economy is stronger and they're going to keep short-term interest rates low. I agree with that, but tapering will be removing money that is flowing into the U.S. economy. And the banks aren't just sitting on it, as you know, and some of that's actually going into the stock market, or it's certainly encouraging investors to put more money into the stock markets. So it will be a reduction in that liquidity that's available. I think more liquidity will emerge from other sources, not least from banks, in terms of being willing to lend more money over the medium term. So I think it'll prevent Wall Street in particular. I think it will prevent from it from going into any sort of real bear market in the next few years. I'm reasonably hopeful on that front, but I do expect that choppy period, and I'd be very surprised if it didn't actually occur. So I don't think that the secular bull market is underway here just yet. We're still in this cyclical bull market, which is looking long in the tooth. We see that in terms of some of the deteriorations that are taking place in other stock markets around the globe, and we also see it in the rotation that has taken place here on Wall Street. One thing that has not happened yet is that I would expect really before the end of this bull market, and before it's followed by more of this sort of choppy ranging phase that I've talked about, is that we would see the resources sectors pushing higher. And some of the leading shares, things like Rio Tinto, which I know some of you hold and which I hold, that's been one of the firmer ones in here of late. And I would expect this laggards in that sector, which have a decent yield and pretty strong cash flow, to be doing a little better. But that hasn't happened yet. But okay. What are the markets that I actually think will be the most attractive and over the medium to longer term? And first, I will mention Japan, which is incidentally, we had a bounce from just a little above that 15,000 level on the Nikkei 225 average, and that's good news in here today. But Japan, you know what a serial underperformer had been, so all what it really needed was a significant change in policy that people believed in and was effective, and that generated sufficient enthusiasm to generate a stronger GDP growth overall in Japan. That I think is happening. It's by no means a certainty, but the odds look favorable. And if Japan, where the key factor here is the softness of the Japanese yen, and we saw the yen weaken again in here today. It's back at 102.85 against the U.S. dollar. And I think we're probably weeks away, several weeks away, from a completion of this medium-term consolidation phase, which represents the first step above the base in our chart terminology. And that would launch another upside move for Japan, which many people feel is selling at about half the book value of what we see on Wall Street. So I favor an overweight in Japan. I favored an overweight in Japan all year. And I remain comfortable with that overall. Some people have a short yen hedge position. I don't think it's absolutely necessary at this stage, but it has certainly helped here during this year to date. I expect the yen to be moving somewhat lower, but not hugely lower. Okay. Next one, China, way overdue, really cheap on valuations for a growth economy. And we're seeing it's the Hong Kong Chinese indices do really quite well here overall. And the A-shares are certainly, the mainland A-shares are certainly looking steadier overall. But as a valuation play on what's likely to be a high-growth economy overall, This does look good to me. A third one to mention here, again, I've mentioned this before, so it probably won't surprise you, but the European markets are still somewhat undervalued relative to most of the other markets around the globe. Not undervalued relative to China, though, I hasten to add. So I actually prefer China to the European markets here, despite the problems that, or despite my reservations about China's overall corruption problem, which is a big issue, but Europe has more bureaucracy, and that's an even bigger issue still. But the European autonomies are doing really quite well. Take BMW as an example, but there are a number of them, as you know. So the European multinationals, I think, are really a fair value, and there's going to be lots of liquidity in these European markets. You know, you're not buying the economy, you're buying some of the leading multinational autonomies that are in the European markets, and I think those look good. And then the USA, I think the USA really is a special story. And veteran subscribers, and some of you have been with me for over 40 years, I haven't said that all that often. I was dismayed to see the U.S. in decline for a long period of time because I felt it was due to self-inflicted wounds. Well, they always are, aren't they? But the regeneration that's occurring in the United States, despite what I think is a fairly significant government headwind, the corporate regeneration that's taking place, I think, is really impressive. And what that's actually creating here is first take the fracking, which was huge and gives the U.S. a very competitive energy advantage. Other nations can eventually catch up, but they're slow to do so, and this is an advantage that's going to remain very much with the U.S. for at least the lengthy medium term in here, and in some cases for the much longer term. In other words, will the European Union, will it ever embrace fracking? I hope so, but no guarantees, and they're certainly resisting so far. Okay, so competitive energy prices for the U.S., which is a magnet for other manufacturing, particularly higher tech manufacturing companies, to move towards the USA, and then there's the technology lead, which I'm somewhat surprised to see this, but I've been talking about it for a good many months here right now. The old story that we were seeing in the 80s and 90s of the U.S. losing its lead in so many technologies, that has not only been halted, but at least partially reversed. And particularly in the high-tech field, and the U.S. is just running away from, just running away with that right now. And that is hugely important over the next 10, 20, 30, 30 years. So my feeling really is that the United States is going to be a major player in that next secular bull market, and tangible evidence already, you could see it's been a very significant player here, albeit with the help of all that quantitative easing. But there are other countries that are not shy or not short of quantitative easing or similar type of monetary support. Okay, so that's a very that's my outlook here in terms of not a bad environment overall for the lengthy medium term, the next few years, but probably more choppy than we've been used to, and I don't expect to see another year like 2013 for a while. But I remain generally bullish, but cautious about the choppy phase generally. The sectors that we like the most, and you'll be familiar with this, is that the autonomies. The autonomies are so much more important than the Nifty 50. You remember that back on Wall Street a couple of decades ago? Well, the autonomies are much more significant because they are truly, truly international. And also the global economy is bigger. There's the triumph of capitalism has taken place since that Nifty 50 period. These companies are exceptionally powerful. And one of my long-term forecasts is that we live in a difficult period for economies generally, for all sorts of reasons. I think the higher unemployment due to technological innovation, which is smart machines replacing jobs faster than new jobs can be created. And that's causing these wealth gaps with more relatively poor people, and that small group of exceptionally rich people, and the middle class struggling to hold its own generally. That's a social problem for governments, but for corporations, technological innovation in particular is their era, and I think they're going to do exceptionally well in it. So I'm more enthusiastic about the longer term potential for stock markets than I've been now in quite a few years. We had a great 1990s, but it also didn't take too much imagination to appreciate that was the end of the secular bull market, or the latter years of the secular bull market. Well, we're looking forward now to the beginning of the next secular bull market, which will run for at least a couple of decades, in my opinion, and be even more powerful in terms of many leading companies. Okay, what about long-dated government bonds? Be careful. This is a bear market there. I don't expect the yields to go back to what we saw in the late 1970s, early 1980s, but they're certainly going to push higher. And I'd much rather have the autonomies than those long-dated government bonds. This is an area where I can never, well, I don't want to overdo it here on length, but investors can run their money conservatively and sensibly, and I think in a rewarding fashion, just by dealing in the autonomies. The latest list that we have that Owen produced is 148 of them. And you know, a few more meet the qualification standard every few months, but and these are global autonomies, and in other words, there are some from Europe, some from Asia, some from in Europe. I should include the UK, a good chunk of them from the United States. Now, getting back to the long-dated government bonds, particularly the funds, people who have these long-dated government bond funds, I think it's a costly area. And people say, well, go into the higher yielding long-dated government bonds, such as some of the European ones. But I think that we're talking about a secular bear market here, and I don't that's on offer. Hopefully it won't unfold too quickly, which would be destabilizing and also become a headwind for stock markets. But right now it's a tailwind for stock markets, because some money, a little bit of that money that's coming out of the bond market, is going into equities. Enough said there. In terms of precious metals, well, I got excited when we saw those key day reversals earlier this week for gold and silver. Unfortunately, they weren't able to advance on those. And but nevertheless, they haven't taken out the lows. But I have to say, the bearish outlook looks like it's not yet ready to give up the game here. So there is a clear risk that gold goes somewhat lower, and that would take silver somewhat lower, almost certainly, over the medium term. The lower these precious metals go, though, in this short to medium term, I think the more attractive they will then begin to look. But I would wait for that, or if we get more upward dynamics in here at this current level, then maybe I would then go back to the view that, well, no, actually we're clearly in a floor area here. But I don't want to prejudge that. The technical evidence is not good enough to say that yet. So I would hold off here and watch. I was discussing this last night over dinner with a very good friend and very long-term subscriber who specializes in the mining industry here, and he had a view which I really share, that the secular bull market in gold may not be over, but we're seeing a lengthy multi-year corrective phase within it. Well, the same thing happened back in the 1970s with that last secular bull market in gold, as some of you closer to my vintage will be able to recall, perhaps. And you can look it up on the charts if you can't. Now, what else to mention here in terms of currencies? I want to mention another. If you give me for chopping around here, but I just say very quickly here, just also among stock markets, that the India situation here, if we get, and I've written and talked about this a lot, so I just summarize it very briefly, but if we get Narendra Modi. Remember, he's the first minister of Gujarat, which has this 10% GDP growth rate. I was astonished to see that the other day, although I knew it had done very well. But since 2001, and that fivefold increase in electrical power generation, way ahead of all the rest of India, very smart, savvy business brain, that he's in the pole position now to be the next prime minister in India in that general election that will take place before the end of May, I believe. And I think the market's already just beginning to discount that, although it's a long way away. But suffice it to say, again, if we get the and we get the victory by Narendra Modi with a workable majority, again, another if. In there, and then he's got this terrific new central banker to work with. That's going to be a, that would be a very powerful force. And in that case, I will very happily hang on to my current not insignificant for me position in India. And if that doesn't happen, if Modi loses for any reason or other, I'm very likely to switch out of India. Okay. What else to mention? I talk again about industrial metals. It looks to me like they're trying to bottom. Aluminium is the weakest one, and that's been the case for a long time. But we need to see more producer cutbacks, and I think we probably will. And then was demand begins to pick up again, then they'll do a little better. Incidentally, on the demand picking up once again, remember Rogoff and Reinhardt. I've often said, look, it takes at minimum 5 to 7 years after a credit crisis recession before you get anything like a normal economic recovery. And then if there have been a lot of other problems along the way, it takes a bit longer still. And what are the other problems with the end of the last secular bull market and all the excesses that had taken place that we've been dealing with and seeing the pain resulting from all that over the last 13, 14 years here? Lengthens that recovery period. That's another reason why I'm somewhat cautious of stock markets, but certainly not outright bearish over the next few years. It'll be a pick and choose market, and we need to be more active in terms of some of our dealing activity overall. And I would stay with the autonomies in that environment. But Rogoff and Reinhardt and others, have said that. Or pointed out the length that it takes, can even take up to 10 years for GDP growth to get back to normal. Well, we're approaching five for the US economy, 5 years. So it takes longer, but that process will happen, and then I think we will well and truly be in the next secular bull market. So all this talk about the U.S. and lots of other countries going into a sustained period of Japan's type of deterioration that we saw following the peak in its stock market in 1990 in its economy. No, I don't think that's going to happen. Or if it happened anywhere, it would be in Europe. And I think Mario Draghi's trying to head that off, and will probably succeed. Okay, in terms of currencies, I've already touched on the yen moving somewhat lower. Key for India would be somewhat stronger rupee, and that will come certainly if you get the government that I feel looks likely. And incidentally, the rupee's under that 62 level that I was talking about all last week and earlier this week. And what among other currencies, the euro up here at 137 here today against the US dollar, 1.37. That's maybe going to be a little bit tough to hold. One of my longer-term forecasts is as the U.S. economy gets back to a more normal type of growth phase, and it takes several more years yet, that we will see a stronger U.S. dollar, but not yet. The Fed is trying very hard and succeeding in keeping the U.S. dollar down. The European, Asian currencies, with the exception of the China renminbi, which is quite firm, but a lot of the Asian currencies have moved lower, partly because of the yen's weakness, and they're a little more competitive in here right now. And in foods, grains and beans, staple grains. Earlier in the week, I'd mentioned rough rice, which among the staple grains, that was the one that was too high and a concern, particularly for the Asian region. It was up near it hasn't been on a tear, but it was up testing the higher side of a very broad trading range. But it's had two big downward dynamics yesterday and today. So it is encountering resistance. And that's a welcome sign. So I think overall, in terms of food prices, not a bad environment. That will help to keep some of the inflation pressures under control. And good for the global GDP growth over the longer term. And I think that pretty much covers it, folks. So I won't abuse you any longer and just say have a fantastic weekend. And I think, again, as I said at the beginning, I think we'll have an almost respectable chart library by the end of next week. And just all the very best to all of you.